mention that. And I really would have liked that point with some dark about him. But perhaps you could get hold of him, DVD. Right. While we're waiting, just to start, as you can see, it is now 11:45. Lunch will be delayed until 1:30. I think I've really mentioned that 1:30, 1:45, and we'll come back an hour later. We are going on, as I said this morning, before we adopted the agenda until 7. Although, it is not my intention to stick to the letter of the law in that regard. The point is there so that we can get to a suitable time or clause to close off, as it were, instead of all jumping up. That's really the purpose of that. Those who do not have transport, and that includes staff, transport will be arranged by committee of six. All right. So having addressed those issues, can we then go to the consideration of the copyright amendment bill? It is useful for everyone now to have the principal act if they require it as such, plus of course what we are currently working on. And just so I think Mr. Medina can bring me who or the department or staff off as I prefer, that's still on track. Are you on track with that DVD? Right. If you would continue then.
Thank you, Chester.
And so that we talked on record, the Honourable MacPherson did indicate he had to just pop out for about it. Was it an hour or something like that? Give or take. Yeah, on the third
party. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to continue on the presentation that we were looking at yesterday from slide 22. And if the committee will bear with me, because these are specific comments, I will go through them in detail. I will not necessarily skip through, so I hope you will indulge me as I read through some of them. So we are looking at clause 27, section 27.6, which looks at the increased penalties for infringement. And these are provisions for fines when the convicted person is not a natural person. And they start as follows. Strong copyright protection is welcome. The fines imposed on juristic persons are draconian and are minimum penalties. Corporate entities should either have to pay 10% annual turnover for each offense or 25% of profit after tax, whichever is the greater, and that the provision of criminal sanction for copyright infringement should be extended to include criminal sanction against failure to report use of copyright work. So this one was just saying that the infringement should be extended to the reporting on the copyright work. And they recommend a penalty of 10,000 or 1 year in prison for each failure to report music usage, and that the complainant in such criminal proceedings should be the collecting society because of the challenges with the mechanisms of meetings of members and so on for the collecting societies. So in this clause, overall, there was the inputs were mixed in terms of the concerns of the harshness of the penalty and the methods of the penalty, but it was, and also implementation proposals of how this should be addressed. And as part of the response, we are saying that the bill provides for the reporting and the sanctions for the collecting societies, and that there will be fines that are imposed on the failure to report. So this, the comments continue on slide 23 on the same clause. One of them is that although the criminalization of such an offense is provided for in the bill, it does not provide for civil remedies and therefore does not fully benefit the right holders. And that the criminal prosecutions for the copyright infringement of audiovisual work are rare and need to be supported by private bodies. And the comment was saying it is not clear whether this proposed change will bring about any real benefit in combating infringement. So with these comments, there were concerns that there is a sentiment that we don't have sufficient capacity to address the infringement despite what is in the legislation. And several comments were raised on measures to address piracy. So many stakeholders linked this clause to the issue of piracy to want to know how we will combat piracy-related issues. So there were few issues around piracy. And there were concerns about the turnover-based fines, for example, the 10%, that the turnover-based fines are not appropriate in the context of copyright infringement, and that the new offense for the maximum of 5 years imprisonment is rather harsh. And then there was another comment that said there's a discord that exists between the punishment proposed for natural persons on the one hand and juristic persons on the other, and that the punishment of the latter, although still heavy, is incomparable to that of the former. And there is an overlap between criminal law and company law. So there were those who were concerned that we seem to be overlapping both the criminal law and the company law and the copyright law, that we need to look at that. And that some raised the reservations about unlimited fines on individuals and fines determined as a matter of turnover, instead recommend an increased fixed maximum fine, like a maximum amount rather than having the turnover a fine. And as a response of the department, we are saying that the civil remedies are already there in the Principal Act, as Ms. Parayachi indicated yesterday, that the right holders, they have the right to go and approach the court for civil remedies, and that the intention of the bill is not to exclude the civil remedies. And also we want to include the fact that the Copyright Tribunal, as amended in the bill, will also be a civil tribunal which could hear these matters. And also we are saying that the Counterfeit Goods Act can be applied on issues of online piracy. And it is noted also that online infringement legislation is the mandate of the Department of Communications. So this is the mandate of another department, the issues of online. So it's something that should be noted. And that turnover-based fines, we think that they're appropriate, especially for juristic persons. So we don't necessarily have to remove them in the bill. And we further say that they were benchmarked against other jurisdictions, and they will serve as a deterrent to the copyright infringement. And we think that the fines or the penalties should be applicable to both to all persons. This one came up a bit in the comments that maybe we should limit this to legal persons and not to natural persons. But it's something that can be a subject of debate, but we think that it should be applicable to both. And as for the harshness of the penalties, we think that the penalties will serve as a deterrent to the infringement of copyright. So moving away from the slide 23, we are now on slide 24.
How are we dealing with those? Are we raising clarification comments as we go?
Yeah.
Can I just check what Honourable Deputy Chairman is? Did you want to comment or raise a question? So it became an issue because I pulled in two or three hands. Was actually on slide 23, am I correct?
23.
And 3. Right. So let's just pause there. Honourable Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, Chair, that we want to effect appropriate redress and ensure that proper remuneration is taken and that sanction against people who get away with what they should not be getting away with. But I must say, as I read this and I read the responses from the DTI, I'm concerned. I'm concerned because I think, you know, yes, deterrence is necessary and sanctions are necessary. That punishment, as I've said before, needs to fit the crime. I'm concerned about with that a strong lobby for where the fine should be at group level and not at underlying business unit level. So you have a large group, Sony Group, I don't know, has a turnover of arguments say $10 billion, which is not out of the ordinary, and there's an infringement, and suddenly they are guilty of an infringement, and they have to pay 10% of their annual turnover, which is 10% of $10 billion. Now that seems to be a wee bit extreme. And you know, we have to be measured here and sensible, which I believe we're not doing in the recommendations. But so we must understand that very clearly. Also the punishment in terms of criminal punishment in terms of sending people to jail for long periods of time. I'm also concerned about this, and all of this concern also extends to the impact and the unintended consequences of what we do to the industry. Now we have to measure this up very carefully, otherwise we will kill things. We need to protect people, we need to ensure that they have redress, we need to ensure that there's sanction, but we cannot continue in this draconian fashion. And I think draconian, as was raised by a number of people in their submission, is the correct word here.
Right, Honourable Wynne.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the penalties that have been suggested here are quite harsh, but we must bear in mind that throughout, up until this legislation, the people that are actually presenting or the artists themselves have never been or not getting what they want to get, and so in order to incentivize we need to have some serious penalties so that they do start implementing, because it seems to me if we let the private sector do what they like, they just don't implement the law, and so if there's going to be no penalties for them. So I think that although, you know, calling them draconian is a little bit harsh, because of the fact that if we don't have such harsh penalties, nothing will change. So, you know, it's not like the private sector came and said, no, we're going to definitely start implementing. Look at the last 5 years, we've made a big change to implement and start, you know, reporting our usage, et cetera, et cetera. They've done nothing. They're just complaining that these are very harsh penalties. But I think that we should keep the penalties harsh, and we should, if the private sector isn't going to, implement what is fair by themselves, then I think we should legislate and force them into that position. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable William. Honourable Hadebe.
No, thank you, Dr. Chairperson. I think I'm in support on the issue of the harsh penalties which must be executed against the infringers of this bill. Because what happens then, Chair, is that the livelihood of other people is being stolen in broad daylight. So what will happen if we don't consider the turnover of the entire group? Of the entire group, it means that the other divisions of the group will be allowed to do as they please, and then the other division will just pay the penalties for the school. So if it's the entire group, I think that the CEO and the chairperson of the board will ensure that when they meet in their annual, in their AGM, will ensure that each and every division complies with the law. But what I wanted to raise, Chair, is the issue of all. I also support that the fund should be applicable to all the persons, juristic or natural. If a natural person decides to steal, that person must be dealt with. Cannot be apologetic because he decided to be a thief. But what is very important, Chair, is the issue of the state of remedies. Usually, the legal aid in South Africa is reluctant to get into that frame. I don't know whether the department has contacted them as requested when this thing was done initially before we referred it to Spain for this. Did you contact the legal aid in South Africa around the issue? Because usually the people who are affected by this, they don't have money to go to court. That's why the issue of debt, we're dealing with it, because the people we're dealing with don't have money to litigate. So here we are going to have an imbalance. As the owner of Kachala has said, Sony, international, very big, got all the resources in the world. We have a musician who's from the rural KZN in a certain village, and he's got his playing and music which is being appropriated without compensation. You see? Thank you.
I think a couple more. Can I take Honourable Gilson Reeves before you, and then can you have take time?
Chair, thank you. We've seen very emotional presentations here by the creative industry and this portfolio. So I think the penalties must be severe, but I also think it's unduly hard to put some people, and we might bite ourselves in the back, or this industry, if we make this, people will be very reluctant to sign up after them. And if we have penalties like 5 years in prison, 10% of turnover, it's unduly hard.
Just as a point of clarity, I'd like to just say that reading through the documentation, the use, the severe criticism and the use of the word draconian and the like come not from necessarily from the players of industry. They come from the experts. They come from Stuart and Fisher and various people like that who are expert practitioners in the complex area of copyright law, and have been practitioners for hundreds of years and have institutional knowledge that surpasses, yes, institutional knowledge of hundreds of years that surpasses us. And we must take that into consideration.
Yes, I'm just looking here on what was the summary, saying summary of four issues that are exhausted, but there was any reference to that. Yes, it did just refer to civil remedies to say, and not anything. Okay. I think the best thing is to do what it seems certainly the Honourable Charlie has done, for us to read what it is that possibly individuals may have said, plus the experts and professionals, what are their views of this particular one, because the last point here in terms of comments has been that concern between the juristic people and the so-called individuals, the overlap between criminal law and company law, in the case where the infringer is a juristic person, will certainly bring about more legal uncertainty. Now, I want that clarified not only by yourself, DDG, but also by Commissioner Advocate Pollock, of the Speaker of United and Company Law as well. The other thing is, the overlap between this will certainly bring about more legal uncertainty where the implementation of this bill is concerned. and arguably blurs the lines between copyright law and company law and criminal law. Now, I think that's a serious statement, and I want it unpacked here, that's why the statement has been made. The other point, though, that is on page 23, the second to last bullet on the left. The other point is reservations about unlimited fines on individuals and the request for a maximum fine. And then it says, and fines determined as a measure of turnover. If you think that the individual has a turnover, well, I don't think that's been unduly harsh to look at the turnover per se. But perhaps in particular, you would address the issue I raised about that second to last bullet on the left. But as of course, to address the clarity sought by the Honourable Pacharya, statements made by Honourable Padevi, as well as Honourable Esther Hayes.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue around the criminal law, company law, and the copyright infringement, the point was made by the stakeholder. We could look at the specific individuals who raised that. But without a deeper analysis on this, one could say, Chair, that the issue around the turnover, we're talking about companies.
Yes.
So that talks to the implications of the company law, and I think also some of the areas that we, the benchmarking that we did from the company law around coming up with some of the issues around the percentages. So I must say we may need to maybe revisit this as a collective just to make sure that we give it the seriousness it deserves.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily see that as a challenge, because then copyright is a specialized industry itself, but then you have businesses in copyright, companies in the copyright-based industries, and they have to comply with issues around corporate governance and what is required by the company's law. So I don't necessarily see the conflict. And if there are criminal-related issues that need to be taken further on, you involve the courts. So the alignment is there. I don't see the contradiction. And it's something that I think we can still look into, but I think that it's something that is catered for. In terms of the concerns of Honorable Kachalia about the harshness of the penalties and the fact that the experts are saying that this is draconian, I mean, it's something that the committee can decide upon, Chair, in terms of whether we want to reduce the extent of the harshness, because it is true, there are strong penalties, that is true. And yes, the experts did raise that they are draconian and they are very harsh. And it's something that as a collective, as a committee, can be addressed. I think from the department, we think that there was a basis for putting them the way they are. They are serious concerns out there, and I think that it's something that needs to be addressed. And I understand that the sentiments around the bill are emotive, Honourable Esther Hazen, they are, and that our artists have been suffering for a very long time. So I think we need to weigh the historical context and where we are as a country, and what has been the challenge, and come up with a balance. I don't know what is the best balance, but I think that maybe this could send a message that we need to start taking our artists seriously and ensuring fairness. Yes, we don't want to chase away investment. We don't want to chase away business opportunities for them, that they are seen as a deterrent now. Businesses avoid them because of the harshness of the certain things. But an infringement is an infringement, and we should be seen to be saying that people must not violate the rights of our artists and performers. So the committee can support us or come up with another view on this, Chairperson, because I think from the DTI side, we understand why we are where we are now. But it's something that is subject to further engagement. I think Honorable Williams also was talking about why it's important that the harshness should remain, acknowledging that the views, I mean the penalties are harsh, but that the context that we are in requires that. That one about the company law, my initial input around it is that, but I think Mr. Advocate Bola will come in, maybe the other colleagues can also give their own context around it.
I want to reiterate what you just said regarding the issue of the penalties and just do a bit of an analysis of what has happened recently also within company law, because it was mentioned that there was benchmarking done with Royal's Consent, for example, in the Companies Act. In the Companies Act, we also have penalties of 10% of turnover due to certain breaches of the Companies Act. And let me just take you back of a matter we had recently. Probably about 3 months ago, we at the CIPC had taken a few companies to court because they had failed to lodge their financial statements. Now, this could be seen to be quite draconian in nature, but it's contained within the Companies Act, and I recall us having a heavy debate around this particular aspect at that particular moment in time. Now, what was stated there within a particular judgment by Justice, I think it's Euster, I'm standing to be corrected, was that companies need to comply fully. You can't cherry pick, you can't deal with certain aspects of a law and not the others. So when it comes to the issue of compliance and regulation and complying with aspects fully of that particular piece of legislation, the judge was quite scathing and quite clear that even though 10% of turnover might seem to be harsh, it is justified in the circumstances. And therefore the judgment states clearly that 10% of turnover had to be paid, because they had to send out a message, as it were, regarding the issue of that. So when we tie it up with 10% of these type of penalties when it comes to the issue of harshness and the conviction and dealing with the issue of copyright, where people's livelihoods are taken into account, we need to look at something that's a deterrent accordingly. So we have to tie it up. It was benchmarked. We see that 10% of the turnover was seen to be a realistic percentage, and therefore we stand in the committee's hands as to whether it is fair or not. Regarding the issue of the overlap between criminal law and company law, and whether there will be harsher penalties for individuals, and looking at the corporate veil when it comes to companies, and who will be prosecuted, etc., one must bear in mind that we have the piercing of the corporate veil, which is a long-standing dictum in company law. We, once again, and I have to, and my apologies for going back to the area for which I'm responsible, which is company law, we have done this on numerous occasions. When a company, under the guise of limited liability, deals with the issue of not following the law, as it were, we then go after those who are responsible, which is the director. We do exactly the same thing here. So if you take the example of Sony, which was used, we prosecute Sony for infringing on the Copyright Act, but therefore we pierce the veil because it was the directors who were responsible for the infringement. So you go after them accordingly as far as that is concerned. So there is no... we believe no overlapping, as it were, between or dealing with individuals differently to to corporates.
Yes, I just see a couple of hands flying up, Honourable Munter.
Thank you, Chairperson. The input would stand by the proposal of the sentences that are said to be harsh. Because when the musicians and all the artists were victimized by capital, no one ever spoke. So why now do we have to protect those people who have been victimizers or oppressors of our people? We need to stand by these people who were victimized, and we believe this is no harsh sentence. If it is practiced in the Companies Act, it must be in the copyright, practiced in the same fashion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash. Honourable Kadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to touch on the issue of these guys who not invest in the country because the sentences are harsh. It is true that if you don't want to become a banana republic, the law must apply across the board. Chairperson, I'll make an example. When the former president of China, Deng Xiaoping, open up the market for China. There are certain laws he put. One of the laws which he put is that when KFC or McDonald's or whatever company comes and invests in China, they'll get land, they'll buy land, invest on it on infrastructure, but after 8 years, that land and the top structure reverts back to the state. It was the law. All those companies which invested in China, they complied with that. You can see that actually it was also expropriation of a special type. But because they were interested in investing there, they'll be. So if these guys are going to be deterred by this, it means that they're the type of investors we didn't need in the first instance. Because we need the people who are going to respect our constitution and respect our business. You cannot steal from your neighbor without reporting that person who's stealing. So I think that these laws and the provisions are here are correct. Let's stick with them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ndebe. Just before you come in, DDG, Honourable Kicharia.
In response, the failure to disclose financial statements is a fundamental requirement, and not to do so is clearly with intent to be fraudulent and can cover up a multitude of sins. There's clear intention there, and it undermines not to disclose financial statements, underlines the very basis of company law. That's why those conditions apply there. To transpose that to this particular area is a jump too far, in my opinion, and a very one that needs to be taken very, very carefully, if at all, because it's not the same. We're not comparing apples with apples. And I'm not arguing that lest it be accused of it. I'm not arguing that there mustn't be redress and that we mustn't fashion the correct measures of redress that allow people to get what is their just deserts. That should be the aim. Now, and there are ways of doing that. Now, and also in respect of going after directors, yes, of course one goes after directors if directors were complicit. That is a fundamental precept of law. But the question is then, when you look at business unit level and group level, you have to be clear that the directors at group level have sight of the malfeasance at business level. And if they did not have sight of that, and they did not, then they have they been derelict in their duty in that regard? How has that been dealt with? And what the various protections in terms of the ring fencing of various business units are, how that will impact on law, on company law in general. These are things that we need to look at carefully, and I think we're being a little bit quick here.
Thank you, Honourable Kicharia. Let's take the DDG. Anyone else who may wish to comment?
Mine is on the input made by Honourable Hadebe around the legal clinic. Whether we have consulted the legal clinic. We haven't consulted the legal clinic, but our focus is currently on the strengthening of the copyright tribunal. And the tribunal will be empowered. It's our intention that we propose that it's empowered to also look at civil matters. So we think that with the tribunal, these issues will be easily accessible to our artists.
Thank you very much, Ms. Padiachi.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to bring some context in terms of the Principal Act, which is the 1978. Currently, the penalties are set at 3 years imprisonment and a fine of 5,000. So if you look at it from a different perspective, we're just updating and increasing what was in the 1978 Act. So if you keep in mind there's already 3 years imprisonment there to go to 5, we're not that far off in the updating of the legislation. This act hasn't been overhauled from 1978. Another perspective that's correct. 2002 was only for needle time, but it wasn't all the other provisions. And then the other aspect is that in light of the public comments, these penalties could deter piracy. It's just a ripple effect that we could now start tackling our piracy issues. Thank you.
Yes, I think the piracy is a very important issue. We did spend a lot of time on this from the previous term because there seemed to be an upsurge, as you recall, in piracy. And to such an extent, became so professional that many of us were fooled. A child would bring home something. Well, I've got this real cheap granny, you know, I paid 50 rand or whatever. And it did look, you know, if you hadn't got the actual CD yourself or something, you wouldn't be too sure. But because one has had that, presentation, I checked very closely and then learned they got it outside school. Now, that's just something small on the, you could argue it's DVD, etc. The fact of the matter is, invariably, not always, it's a local artist. And even if it is an external artist, the same would apply. That happens to be how they earn their living, and we are depriving them of that. So I think the piracy issues are very important in this regard. But I did want everyone just to comment from either the DD, the DTI, the CIPC, and I know the Jack is also here with us this morning. They are also very welcome because Jack raised issues like this at length about how things were just being taken over and artists not benefiting. Having said that, I have a request that came to the table right now from one of the visitors, and in particular, Thumro. And I want to just point out, we're always ready to listen to anyone and everyone who is involved and working or stakeholder in the area. But this is actually a result of the second lot of public hearings, not the first lot. Public hearings and submissions were taken last year, July, August 2017. Then again, more recently, as you can see from here, there was a request, you know, for a little bit broader when we fine-tune things. And in fact, Thumro, I don't even know where you're sitting as I talk, but I am looking at your submission that was made very recently. Where's Thumro? Oh, yeah, right here. I'm looking at it, and I'm not sure if you were consulted about it, but it goes on to deal with broadcasting, licenses, BMAC, PPA, etc., accreditation at length. In fact, it was one of the longer submissions. So we have already got it. And, you know, it would be unfair for us to give you something extra that we wouldn't give someone else. Thumro can again come in when we do the next bill, which is related. That is the protection of performers. So please, we have noted the content, and they will be tackled here. Thank you. That was the 2nd of August 2017, and again more recently in June, July. But to come back to the issue in question here, we were dealing with pages 22 and 23. And the issue that really came to the fore, some of the comments were, not all of them by any stretch of the imagination, not even 50%, but some. It's too harsh. And I did ask for a full breakdown on who said it was too harsh. Those who stood to lose. In other words, this is their work and they stood to lose. Were they in the majority of saying the offences were too harsh? Or those who benefited directly from that? And I haven't yet received that information from the staff, so I won't comment on that. Suffice to say,
that if we look at 1978 and the inflation, which was why originally the suggestion was 10 years, some of you will recall, and not 5. We came down to 5 because we were looking at the economy then, and inflation, etc., etc. And inflation, to some extent, affects your fines and, of course, your time served in prison. How many other prison sentences have remained at the 1978 target in prison? I don't know. This would also give us a guide. I do know in 3 jurisdictions, among them the United States, they increased the penalties not just by 2 years or not even, you know, 30%, but they have gone up 5 times. No option of fines in some cases. So I do think that in South Africa, we have been somewhat measured. I don't want to say lenient, we're not lenient, but they are more measured when compared to other jurisdictions. And if we are going to address the loss of income for artists, then we've got to take this a bit more seriously. So I think that if we are going to look at anything, it shouldn't be the reduction of a prison sentence, which is currently at 3. The bill takes it to 5 years. After 55 years later, or certainly 50 years later, yes, 1978 to 2018, as it were, you know, it's a long, long time, 40 years. So the harshness of the penalties, were people referring largely to financial penalties, looking at the DDG stuff, or were they referring to the prison sentence in particular? One here does talk about the fine and also talks about the maximum of 5 years as unduly harsh. All right, but others do talk about possibly individuals not having such a high penalty per se, and that companies could, you know, be facing the larger. So I would just like 1 or 2 comments on, do you think that what we have here currently in the proposed legislation, the amendment, is too harsh for companies? Marking that quite separately to the membership. That's the first. And secondly, quite separately, or is it too harsh on individuals? That's the comment I want. Yes, Honourable Williams.
Jefferson, I think it's important that we understand why these offences or these, you know, at times in prison are needed, not just the length of them. For instance, if we make it 5 years, I mean, I don't think that these sentences are harsh at all. I think they're fine. But is it going to be effective? Is it going to be enough of a deterrent to put off? Because what can happen is, let's say we had a company and I was the one who infringed the law and I went to prison for 5 years. The next CEO comes in and maybe also is infringing the law, thinking, what are the chances of them charging the same company twice? You know what I mean? Things like this. So we must look at how effective these will be. I think that the fines should go up and the prison sentence should stay the same. That's my opinion.
Does anyone else wish to comment on the book, Charlie?
I think I've made it clear that I think on both counts we've been too harsh. I think that we need to apply our minds as to how to ensure that the artist who is being hard done by receives the appropriate remuneration in respect of what they ought to have received in the cumulative total, with an appropriate additional stipend for the fact that they are stipend longer because they were defrauded or whatever the case may be. Now that applies
that ensures that the artist is getting their pound of flesh. And we shouldn't conflate that necessarily with a sledgehammer approach to beat the person who's, or the juristic person, non-juristic person, who's been responsible for that additionally in a draconian fashion. And perhaps there's measure that need that are required to say yes, in addition you will suffer these sanctions. But I think to be utterly draconian defeats the purpose.
I support what is there in the company act. The issue of 5 years must be like that. And the fines must go up as indicated that we want them. Yeah, sure.
Honourable, yes, sir.
Chair, thank you. Through policies and practices, we want in this committee to create jobs and look after the industry and things. And I think through this bill, we very much succeeded in that, but we must also be careful that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot. Where we try to look and the authors that we want to try and protect here will not get, if we have this harsh penalties like we're trying to implement here, a lot of industries and a lot of bars and shops and whatever will refuse to play their music, will refuse to do, because if you just treat all these infringements under one blanket issue, it's going to be a problem.
Perhaps we should look at it differently. Yes, we are saving some time, yeah, because this is a crux. It was originally seen as a flaw that will provide a deterrent, you see. Now, my question is this. How effective has the current law been in not only identifying abusers, but in having them arrested? Because if I'm going to learn, well, you know, in a year maybe we arrest one or two, then I'm going to have a problem. Because then you're looking at implementation as well. So I'm pushing this to not only the department, NIPC, I'm also asking the Department of Arts and Culture, who learn about people whose work is misused and misused without a request for copyright and infringement and so on and so forth. Have you any comments at the moment, or would you like to comment after lunch?
Chair, at the moment, not necessarily, but I'll check with the CIPC if there's anything. We can come back on this.
Jefferson, an example of how the law hasn't been implemented by the people that use music, etc., is an example that they made a movie out of called Finding Sugarman. Sugar, Jesus Rodriguez, an artist, an international artist, didn't even know that South Africa loved his music. He went to number one, he was everywhere, he never received a cent for that money, never received a cent ever. And we had in the country laws to stop that practice, and the people that exploited his music have never been prosecuted, he's never received any money. So I think that we can clearly say that the lack of implementation by the private sector with regard to the exploitation of musicians is rampant, I would say, and I think that we should just go with these harsh penalties. Thank you.
Yes, one of my favorites, Sugar Man. I wasn't aware that he wasn't getting sent. Right. Anyway, I do want to respond either after lunch or certainly by Monday. Because if I am going to learn that our record is abysmal, we may have to put it up to 10 years and try to look at our inspection, so that when you do random inspections and collar someone, full penalty is applied. But of course, I'm not suggesting for one moment that is what the committee members would like to see happen. All committee members who want to ensure that whatever penalty they want to put into law and see enacted is considered reasonable, so that it's not thrown out. But it does make you think. We do have a law at the moment, 3 years. In 3 years, ABC has an opportunity to write a novel. This has to move to page 24.
This line. Most of these comments were on the turnover. The concerns were mainly on the turnover base penalty. And just before I go to slide 24, just to reiterate, Chair, that we focus mainly on the advertised clauses. So just to say that to stakeholders, in case they expected us to look at 2017 inputs and other inputs they've made before, so that if they don't see their inputs, they shouldn't think we haven't looked at them. But on the summary, we try to look at everything they said, just to capture it.
As I say, the Sunrow one is actually on the current, you know, the republished lot. But you have taken them into account from what I can see. Are we then moving then?
Yes, okay. On slide 24, clauses 29 and 30, it's on the Copyright Tribunal. The Copyright Tribunal is not a new institution. It is already provided for in the Copyright Act of 1978. We are strengthening it in the bill. So these are some of the inputs that we have received. One of them was that Section 29IC empowers the tribunal to impose a fine under Section 175 of the Companies Act. And the input was that the tribunal is not the appropriate forum to impose such fines. And also that it is unclear what the rationale is for empowering the tribunal to make an order for an administrative fine. So this talks to the empowerment of the tribunal. And then this one was not very clear, but we thought we should capture it. It was saying that the state has no interest in the dispute that will be heard by the tribunal, and there is no justification for it benefiting from them. And that there's a need for more definitions and descriptions for the Copyright Tribunal, that we need to strengthen, say, for example, the rules and other procedures around the tribunal. And that the proposed Section 29(1) does not make any provision for the resignation of the deputy chairperson. And that, so that's around the period of the resignation. And what we are saying is that we think that the tribunal should have the power to impose fines, and that the tribunal will be empowered to hear different matters and disputes. And regarding the issue of the deputy chairperson and the chairperson, we had discussions with the CRPC around that, and we think that because of the nature of the tribunal, such resources may not necessarily be used in that context. So for the context of the tribunal, unlike other institutions, we may not necessarily have to have a chairperson and a deputy chairperson, because we're talking about judges. But I will request the CIPC to elaborate further on this point, to justify why we should not necessarily be talking to deputy chairpersons and the chairperson.
Yes, Advocate Paula.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chairperson. Yes, we have been meeting with the DTI regarding this, and what we did was we took some of the lessons that we learned from what we call the trademarks court that we administered in CIPC, and transposed it onto aspects of the Copyright Tribunal. We believe on the CIPC side that this should not be a permanently set up body, a warm body that comes to work every day. You know, such as the company's tribunal. We believe it should be as and when applications are made. We should be able to call on a body of experts like retired judges or retired senior counsels. We currently use trademarks. We because we already have a body of work that we administer, and we know exactly how it functions. And we firmly believe that it can function the same way. If we had to look at it in terms of, for example, the trademarks court which we administer, if we had to have a full body that is set up to deal with the trademark, they'll be sitting all day twiddling their thumbs, waiting for people to arrive. So we firmly believe that it should be this application-based approach. We should have this panel or pool that we can call on when applications are made in order to use their expertise. Number one, it will save us cost. We don't have to set people up. It will save us the cost of administration. We can certainly play the role of administrators as on the CIPC side, which we currently do, once again, in the trademarks area. We can provide resources to deal with the registry functions, for example, of applicants who come forward. We can deal with the issue of providing administrative support to whoever will be the presiding officer, if you can call them that in the context, and basically deal with the day-to-day running of the tribunal. We do not see a fully fledged body being set up in this respect. I think I hopefully have covered it.
I think you have succinctly covered it, as I said before. Now, members, this was in dealing with, I see it does go over the page, of course, as well. Am I right? It's pages 24 and 25. Right. Have you concluded at the moment, EDG?
I was going to pages 25 to 26. Yeah. So the input on the copyright tribunal continues. So there was a comment of whether the introduction of a tribunal is for the tribunal that can hear any matter referred to it by the commission, as opposed to a tribunal dealing exclusively with copyright-related matters, and they were saying that that one is advisable. And then there was an issue or an input about the nature of the expertise that the judges must have, that we need judges that are well competent in copyright-related matters. And they were also suggesting that we work with experts, that they should be experts, not necessarily judges, but even academics and so on, that can be brought into the tribunal. And the other one is more of a, this one is more of a correction to the legislation, that Section 36 that deals with the appeal is deleted. I think it was an omission, and that this section needs to be reinserted, and also that it applies to the issue of the review of the decision of the tribunal, that we need to include them in the bill. So this is more than a technical input, and that's for the judges. The second last bullet, that has Section 36. Yeah, so they've identified a loophole in the bill that has been deleted around the appeal and the review of the decision. Yeah, it has to be reinserted. Yeah. Yes. And that for the eligibility of the judges, there was a proposal that we need to include the criminal record issue as a criteria for selecting the judges.
Clauses 29 and 30, the copyright tribunal. Now, I must just inform members, it's very important that, you know, the issue is that whatever clause or bill you want to bring to Parliament, that is tabled in Parliament, we must always ascertain the relationship and alignment, etc., with other bills, and also whether we have, if you want to put it this way, jurisdiction over that. And perhaps it could be another, not just trading industry, but another mandate. It could be justice, it could be X, it could be Y. And these are very important issues. Now, when it comes to issues around the copyright tribunal, I think you've been made aware of this, have you, GDG? Hopefully you have. Because I know staff have been in and out on leave. But this one is addressed to Chief Justice Mahenge. Right. Consultation on the redraft copyright amendment bill with reference to the proposed amendments to copyright tribunals. According to the Superior Court Act 2013, Act No. 10 of 2013, Section 3, the Minister must be consulted prior to the introduction in Parliament by a person other than the Minister of any bill. C. That amends the structure or functions of any court of law or tribunal referred to in paragraph A or B. The PC Trading Industry is in the process of concluding these deliberations, etc., and as a result, the committee is considering retaining the Copyright Tribunal and strengthening its provisions that govern it. And then redrafted section is attached. The proposed amendments are provided for in clauses 30 and 31 of the redraft. The Department of Justice and Correctional Service advised the committee to consult. It should consult the Chief Justice on the matter. Therefore, in compliance with that Act, etc., etc., the committee requests you to consider these proposed amendments and submit your position on the matter by Tuesday the 22nd of August. Now, this was signed off about a week or so ago, the 6th of August. The committee has scheduled to provisionally conclude its deliberations on Thursday the 24th. Already, as we know, that has changed, and would appreciate it if you could speak to your position at the meeting scheduled XYZ, if you wish to do so. Not compelling the Chief Justice, but rather it's in his court as well. The meeting will take place at 9, etc., etc. Now, Mr. Hermans is not here, but as of yesterday, we had not yet had a response as to whether the Chief Justice would be here or not. It was actually, in the end, only sent, I think, on the 8th or 9th of August. You know, we're in a holiday period, so I'm just not sure of the exact date. So we've had to do this to comply with legislation. All right, just so that all of you are aware of that. Right, now we can engage on these matters. That's from 24, looking at the tribunal. It is retained, but strengthening of the powers. Any comments from that before we deal specifically with the deputy chairperson? Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got a question of clarity. The tribunal will, you know, they'll be approached by somebody where there's been a contravention of the act, and then they will be established, and then they will make a decision, and then we want to impose some fines. I just want to know, are these the same fines we were talking about just now? In other words, then, is that what it works? Because I'm not familiar with the function of the tribunal. So if I'm a performer and I get ripped off by somebody, I can go to the tribunal and they can potentially issue fines. So I just want that clarity first before I come with my next question. Is that all right, sir?
Yes. Honourable Williams, they will issue our fines, but I will request the CIPC, Mr. Pecci, to assist with this one.
Mr.
Pecci.
Yes, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DDG, Honourable Members. The intention of strengthening the Copyright Tribunal is to make it a civil tribunal, so it should be able to deal with civil matters.
Thank you, Chair. So therefore, I'd like to say we support them getting this option, because the concern about the criminality and then those huge penalties might be the last resort, you could say. So the tribunal could be the first resort. You get your fine, you've been warned, don't do it again, here's a big fine. Now they go, if they do it again continually, they'll end up in prison for 5 years. So maybe that's how it could work. Thank you.
Is that indeed how it is intended to work, CIPC?
Yes, remember, the other thing that the current tribunal is doing is only limited to license schemes. So the intention is also to broaden the jurisdiction of the current tribunal so that it can deal with any other matter that we want to put in this bill.
I think after you said all that, Honourable Williams wasn't sure if it meant to yet.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you.
Right. For those who are not too sure, what does CRP stand for? It's the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. Right. And it really is one of the essential planks of our economy. When that does, when something goes wrong there or people perceive certain things, it directly impacts on our economy. It's critical. It's, it's a mandate. Honourable Natasha.
In the middle of us, we want to make an observation and an appreciation of that. That previously CIPC has been in this committee day in and day out, but not anymore. And we appreciate that they are now a team audit.
The issue is, did you particularly want to say team audit or unqualified? Yes. We've left all these terms off, but the fact it is pertinent, that comment. Before you were the commissioner there, Dr. Advocate Follows, and before your predecessor, you may recall it had a different name. Do you remember what it was? It was the for the Cipro or something. What did that stand for? Do you recall? The company
that intellectual property registration. The reason why it was changed is because we moved from a registration office to a regulator.
Frankly, that's not the only reason. It was as filthy as the city of stables, and was the first challenge I faced when I became chair of trade and industry 9 years ago, 9 and a half. And there was only one way to address this mix. Because everyone seemed to be involved in doing the wrong thing. Right down to, I think, the receptionist, unfortunately. And they literally had to clean out the thing and bring in someone from the private sector to just run, administer things for a short while before we enacted CIPC. Now, why do I say that? That has an impact on our economy. It's a very, very important plank. So now we have CIPC and a number of checks and balances have been put in to overcome the idea of, you know, double people replacing themselves on boards and all kinds of shenanigans going on. And this has been an uphill battle, I understand. But on top of that, so we address the negative issues, it is now one of the best performing entities in government. The second issue, why it is important, you know perfectly well how much we've lost in copyright over not simply rooibos tea, wines and herbs, etc., but many other things, services, which we were almost reluctant to go and get patents on or to register it. But now, even co-ops, I understand, are not charged a cent to register or very low amount. Is it, Commissioner? I know it's a very low amount. So everyone must register. And it's there to protect all non-profit as well as profit companies. And I was heartened to learn overseas recently, the SAEU, I think it was, that what a sound reputation that we now have, they can rely on the information. So I really want to appeal to you, Commissioner, that you retain that, not simply perception, but that track record that we have now managed to re-establish and succeed. I want to complete this, if no one has a comment, to get on to page transitional provisions. And I want to complete transitional provisions before lunch and the other comments. Lunch in the top half one.
Thank you, Chair. On the transitional provisions, the comment that was raised around the Intellectual Property Amendment Act, IPA, and the comments are as follows. Some of the comments were recommending that it must be repealed, and that there is no reason why we should keep it even in our current legislation. There was a bit of unhappiness about IPLA not being implemented, and so the suggestions were around the repeal. I think there were two or three recommendations around it that it must be repealed. And others were around technical terms, for example, where there is a reason a traditional community cannot be considered as a collective management organization. So it was basically around that, to say, why are we keeping it? Why shouldn't we just repeal it? And as we have already communicated to the committee as a department, we are engaging with the Department of Science and Technology. We recently met with them, and their bid is not yet finalized. They're in the NCOP processes, and we've engaged in terms of how we are best going to collaborate going forward. So we are of the view that we will still be implementing IPLA, because issues of indigenous knowledge are very critical for our society and our economy, and that we still need to sustain. We may not necessarily implement all the provisions in the Act, but certainly the principle and the policy framework still applies. So we might maybe consider some of the technical suggestions that some submissions made. For instance, one of them was saying that we could consider defining indigenous cultural expressions and so on. But overall, we say that it should be retained.
Well, if I recall, I think you were in the committee at that stage as well, Honourable Madeli, even the traditional, half of traditional leaders, etc., were part of the last year as well. But it is disappointing, and it's regrettably, I wouldn't like to use the word indictment, but it almost amounts to that, that it has not yet been implemented. It was an important act that went through in the previous term, and you know, we should implement our legislation. So we're very pleased that you're now announcing that this is moving forward, and secondly, that you are working in collaboration with other departments. Other comments? Page 27, 28.
Thank you, Chair. These are broad comments. We decided to bring them in because they are quite important, and it does not take away from the fact that we have only looked at the advertised clauses, but we thought that these are some of the issues the committee could look at, maybe in terms of how they can impact on the bill. In the previous submissions, one of the things we had indicated as the DTI was the removal of the computer program, because when we were looking at the list of exceptions and other issues to include, we were looking at the issues of the disabled people and the education, the libraries and archives. But there has been a call from several submissions that we need to reconsider inserting the computer program. So we thought that we should highlight this because it was in this committee where it was removed from our recommendation. So it's just for the committee to to make a decision around that. So there was a request to reinsert this back to the bill.
I've been here to confirm that the committee has not adequately deliberated on the TPS. Do you wish to comment, members of the committee? This was specifically referring to the committee. So the first issue is a reintroduction of the exception. Yes, that's been addressed. The introduction of the private copy levy. That was raised quite seriously by several members. The collecting society per set of rights. While we've got all these collecting societies, you dwelt about that at length, and I thought there was a view that do we have to have so many? One view was that yes, it's competition. On the other hand, why have so many? Are they even doing their work? I don't know. The other one is the TPMs, the transaction. No, that isn't the transaction. What's the TPM?
Technological protection measure.
The cyber crime comes under that, the revision of that TPM suggestions to ensure the effectiveness.
I think what is important, members, is that you know what you actually spoke of. Those of you who wanted one society and principle one society per right, you know your views. Those who said no, let's have more. Do you want to add anything to that? Because there is a principle I gave which committee about not adequately deliberating on something. Honourable Mantosh.
So listen, I wish this talk had been led because the subcommittee of the ANC that speaks and deals with this bill is not here. We don't want to speak in parable with them. Can we flag it until next week, this part of this portion? It's my opinion.
Because the subcommittee of the committee, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. That is Honourable Chirko. She's not yet here. Who else isn't here? Riani isn't here. That's two. Honourable Pacharya is here.
I sit on it, but I've yes. not been sitting on it for long. So I can't actually add to this. Technically, she has been here too.
It may be that we do need to wait until she returns to get that, because I don't know whether this is a valid criticism or not, because what was dealt with so, and members who are from the subcommittee, there's only one person. The other three are not here. So let's wait until next week before we tackle that. Then we have the next comment on page 28.
Chair, sorry to take you back. On the 27, not for discussion. I just wanted to request the CIPC to maybe talk to the issue of the SABC and the two collecting societies, if they don't mind. To just talk to the current situation and the lump sum amount that was paid, just to paint the picture around the dynamic with the one collecting society.
Yes, and before switches on the mic, as it were, I certainly wish to find out whether you are aware of huge amounts of profits being made in these collecting societies and even shipped out the country as an investment. Is this legal under a non-profit organization? Thank you, Elliot.
I'll speak to the second part, Madam Chair, and Kali, who's has intimate knowledge of the SABC matter, will speak to that. But just to let the committee know what we've been doing on collecting societies over the period. You know, collecting societies is a law unto themselves, really, for very, very long. So they have been collecting all these monies. They've been using exorbitant amounts under the guise of administrative fees. I don't know if them are in this room, but I have the protection of Parliament. and so we remember, because we're doing an amendment to the Copyright Act, we're trying to strengthen our powers, but in terms of the limited powers we have, we thought we should play a more meaningful role because of what we believe is due to the artists. So what we did for the first time under the last distribution plan of SAMHSA, of SAMHSA, is that we then engaged the auditors, and we put out a tender to auditors because we wanted to audit the distribution plan. It was the first time it's ever been done as far as that is concerned. We had multiple meetings with the Collection Society for them to understand that for as a regulator, we were now scrutinizing their books quite seriously because we want to see exactly how the distribution is undertaken. But what we did, when we spoke to the auditors, we gave them a twofold mandate. One is to deal with the issue of the distribution itself and to see that all money that are due to artists are duly paid, including what has been kept back for administrative costs. But also we wanted to deal with the issue of what gaps do they find in the actual collection and what type of recommendations can be made as far as a framework that needs to be put in place in order for us to regulate collective societies better. So we've received that report. We can make the report available to Parliament accordingly. And what we started doing at CIPC, we started putting together a framework document, which we call a guideline for collection, as it were. It's laying out not only the legal prescripts and what is required in terms of the law, but also dealing with practice and how do we believe we can strengthen the practice of collective societies, as it were. And we practically have concluded on that particular work, which we also can make that available. But just to say that because we have had such an acrimonious relationship with collection societies over the last year, rightfully so, because we started questioning the fact that, as I said, they do their own, well, I shouldn't speak all of them, some of them are better than others, doing their own thing as far as the distributions are concerned. And we have been involved in numerous court cases at quite substantial costs. But just because we firmly believe that we should play this meaningful role as far as ensuring that what is due to us should flow and the money should flow accordingly. We continue to do that. We continue to scrutinize. We don't rubber stamp the distributions, as it were, as in the past, but make sure that we play an active, meaningful role to ensure that what has been collected is audited and rightfully distributed to the artists. So we continue to build on that relationship going forward.
Thank you very much about that. But just on one issue of the NPO, they are NPOs, as I understand.
Yes.
So, could you just clarify for me, as an NPO, you have this extra money, which does belong to you and personally.
I'll tell you what the legal position is. Non-profit companies, as it were, in terms of the memorandum of incorporation of the particular companies, as contained also in the schedules in the companies, that state that whatever you make needs to be plugged back in. All right, you can't go and use it for your own means. You can't pay massive bonuses and salaries and stuff. You are allowed to pay it, don't get me wrong, but you must plug back in for the advancement of that non-profit memorandum and what the company was set up for. So if, for example, you are, and I used the example with one of the MPs yesterday, she said it's a very bad example you use. But I'll use it once again. Many churches, for example, are non-profit companies, so whatever they collect in terms of donor funding or whatever the case may be, needs to plug back into the church for schemes and stuff related to that. Unfortunately, what she said to me was that you haven't obviously not seen the pastor's house, so that was quite a bad example to use. But I'm using the aspect of what the law of non-profit companies is. So, for example, what we are proposing, and thank you for reminding me of that, Madam Chair, what we are proposing when it comes to the issue around collective societies and the money that they make is that we also should set up certain schemes for artists. For example, we all have observed and have seen many articles about artists who die in poverty where they can't even pay for their funerals. We are looking at schemes now where percentages of that particular money which collected is set up burial schemes or funeral schemes. You know, or education schemes for the contractual nature of artists for them to understand, education schemes. So those are the type of things that we want to do as far as trying to regulate this industry.
Now, I am very pleased to hear there's going to be a regulation, and I must, as chairperson, pursue my inquiries regarding the repatriation of funds from the Dubai investment.
I'm pleased to hear that so-called rubber stamping is going to stop. But a little announcer raised in my head when you said that the rubber stamping of distributions, as was done in the past, has now stopped. Now, when was that stopped? Who was responsible for rubber stamping in the past? Because surely that is responsible for the parlous state that we find ourselves in. So this needs to be answered.
Thank you, Honourable Kicharia. We have two other hands, Honourable Mantash and Honourable Yesterday.
Chairperson, we appreciate the info supplied to us by the advocate. My issue is, if SABC has done a retrospective distribution of payment, then it is not illegal for us to say the other distributors must pay people retrospective. Because when this matter was said, when the presentation was made here, that with a retrospective their payment will be unconstitutional, that broke my heart and made me to have an attitude towards this copyright bill. Because my main issue was, those people who were victimized and not given there, what was due to them must be paid back. And this, for me, is a precedent that has been set by SABC, which warrants us to go back to them and ask them to which extent or to how far back did they do the retrospective payment to beneficiaries. For me, I think my interest is in the building coming, if that is your chapter.
Yes, my name was raised by a number of members of that issue. Honourable Esther Hazen.
Thank you, Chair. I have to agree.
Are you online?
I have to agree, I think, with the forums you're trying to set up. The intention here is to protect and finally get the law to protect artists to get recognition for their work and stop these monopolies and people using or earning money on their work. So I have to really say that it's commendable.
I don't think anyone on the committee is opposed to this more stringent regulation of collecting societies. One has seen this, you know, there is a book festival, I think it's in Franschhoek, they're complaining about it. So we're not just talking of this group or that group or the next group, but across the board. Numbers come here again to get a second or third bite themselves because it's the same kind of issue. But I must say this about Mumro. This first came to our attention under President Zuma, who Mumro visited. And we were asked as trade and industry, what are you doing about this? And I'm not talking about 5 years ago, but 9 years ago. So, yes, finally we are trying to do something about it. And I believe we will address most of the issues. We won't address them all, and I'm not going to pretend we will. But can you, do you wish to continue, please, as we get follow-up?
Before I hand over to my colleague who knows very much about the SABC matters, I just want to respond to the Honourable Kicharia, is that for the last, how many years have we been dealing with the litigation? For the past eight years or so?
8 years?
Probably about 8 or 9 years as far on my watch, I can say, we have been dealing with intense scrutiny. My colleague, Mr. Pitchy, has been subject of abuse when it comes to this area. I've sat in meetings where he has questioned distribution, and he really has taken a knock for a lot of it. We have been in multiple litigations. We've been all the way to high courts when we questioned some of these practices. So when it comes to the issue of the fact that when I spoke about the rubber stamping, I can look into the past. I can't speak about the fact of the distributions on my watch, as it were, but I can look at certainly the historic aspects of distribution and make it available to the community.
Thank you, Chair. On the issue of SABC, and I'm not going to speakers if I have received the information from SABC on how much they have paid for infra supplies, because to date we have not received a distribution plan from Infra. So on the, I think it was on the 6th of June, it was said on media that SABC has paid Infra an amount of 16 million. Okay, so that's how we got the news. Then Sampra was worried that they were not paid. I think they were claiming around 75% from the monies that should be paid to Infra. And the information that we got is that SABC, after they have done their calculations, they have apportioned 25% to Sampra and 75% to Infra. Now, the issue was, how did they determine the percentages? So the issue of membership and the repertoire belonging to the two collection societies was an issue. So because we have members who will belong to two collection societies, and that from a user point of view, it causes a lot of problem, because the other collection societies, they will claim to say you should have paid the amount to us, and the other one will do the same. So as we speak now, we have not received a distribution plan from Infra. We are still waiting for it. But one of the problems that we can share with the committee is that one collection society per right is the way to go, because we won't have a problem of members belonging to two of collection societies. And from a user point of view, it's really a big implementation challenge. So even from the submission, I think they are all speaking in one way to say one collection society is the way to go. So those are just practical challenges from our side.
So what you're saying, if someone writes the word something, maybe in your home or out of the book, then you belong to that particular collection agency, then it's set to music. You may even be the one who takes it to music. You then belong to another. Is that what you say, collecting agency on the music?
And then someone decides to perform. So I just want to clarify that. When you say different rights, is that how I'm understanding you? Is that correct?
Let me give you an example, because I'm referring only to middle time rights. In the national time right, you have two beneficiaries. You have a performer who is singing, and you have a record label that has recorded that performance. You will find that the performer belongs to another collection society as a member, and the record company belongs to another one as a member. Because the collection society that we have currently for the middle time, they are formed by both the performers and the record label. So it's that implementation challenge that really makes things not easy for us.
Members, I'm looking around, and everyone's awake today, of course, and it's marvelous. I wouldn't have been that good. I mean, yesterday it was quite amazing, someone nearly fell off their chair. But, I think we have concluded comments here from DTI and from SIPSI. Is that correct? Yes. But, yes, Mr. Benji?
Yeah, maybe just to respond to Honourable Mantashe's issue about SABC having paid this prospectively. SABC has not paid this prospectively. It's just that they have a backlog in terms of paying collection societies their money. But the law was there.
How long was the backlog? 1, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years?
SABC just doesn't pay.
The regulations were promulgated in 2006.
I think that answers the question, right? Yes, DNG?
Chair, just one point on slide 29, just to select that. There was a concern raised that on slide 25, that there's no provision for the company's commission, for the commission itself, that we need to make a special indication about them in the bill. So it's like an omission, yeah, that we must consider.
All right, so that when we are after lunch, we need to come to Advocate Mandela, or do you wish to come back on Thursday? Now, there is a log sheet here. Did you want to come back?
We were going to come back with some of the proposals on the clauses that we spoke to yesterday, and the log sheet is one of them.
Okay. So you wish to continue with outstanding issues that were specifically raised yesterday. All right, DEG, we can certainly do that. As we move off to lunch, it's about 1:25. We'll return to start at 2:30. This is relatively safe for paper, but I can't be accountable for anything electronic.